Okay, welcome everyone. This is, I don't know what kind of show this is going to be. This might be a rip-roar or might be a big sleeping show. I don't know. A lot of fails, a lot of something going on here. But anyways, I'm tired. Should have just, should have taken a nap, I think. But I did try to get about 20 minutes of high rest there, about an hour and a half ago. Yeah, hour and a half. We're going to continue reading The Sexual Sabotage. How one mad scientist unleashed a plague of corruption and contagion on America by Dr. Judy Reisman. And I wanted to say all stations are listener supported, so please help them out if you're able to. It's been 2 weeks since I read. And he couldn't get her doctor all straightened out last week, so she had to take tomorrow off here, yesterday off also. Hopefully that's all taken care of, Annie. I'll go back one paragraph to read over from 2 weeks ago. Penthouse perpetrated the rape and incest theme with Wicked Wanda, a comic strip starting in 1973 that copied Playboy's Little Annie Fanny comic strip that began in October 62. The Playboy strip's underlying pedophile core is based on its inspiration, Harold Gray's Little Orphan Annie. Playboy's Annie Fanny is a massive, breasted, blonde, innocent, stripped naked and often gang-raped from 1962 to 1988, and again briefly in 1998. Wicked Wanda, the Penthouse copy, is raven-haired, huge-breasted, naked, wicked, and depraved. Her blonde, childlike sidekick, Candy Floss, wearing a white and pink communication-like dresses prior to various rapes in the Penthouse pedophile hook. Ugh, jeez, that's too bad, Amy. In December 1977, issue of Penthouse initiated the magazine's big incest campaign with Incest, the Last Taboo, by their flaccid writer, Philip Nobile. Although Nobile used Penthouse Forum to push incest, he reported that same year that Willard Galen, M.D., a psychiatrist at Columbia Medical School, was appalled by the promotion of positive incest. Galen viewed incest as a problem not unlike that of homosexuality. It implies that some wrong has already occurred, that incest revealed a disordered, diseased family life. He added, a child would have plenty of intercourse in life if he or she is getting to have only one crack at a caring parent, said Nobile. Despite Kinsey's statistics, Galen remained unconvinced of non-traumatic incest. Galen said he had more trust in the wisdom of the Old and New Testament and every other religious group, and wouldn't believe in positive incest if it lay down on his couch. Nobile also quotes Abraham Cardner, M.D., a psychiatrist specializing in incest, who thought that such articles will throw a monkey wrench into society by introducing the idea that incest is beautiful. The family is in enough trouble already from homosexuality, but Nobile panders incest. In page upon page of Penthouse, millions of users lusted after unattainable inaccessible young women whose illustrated pictures and photographic montages provoked consumers for sex. Psychologist and men's rights advocate Warren Farrell, Ph.D., answered the dilemmas for millions of frustrated, aroused men and boys, and even women and girls. When I get my most glowing positive cases, incest is part of a family's open, sensual style of life, wherein sex is an outgrowth of warmth and affection. It is more likely that the father has good sex with his wife, and his wife is likely to know and approve, and in one or two cases to join in. Statistically, some percentage of those reading Farrell will have acted out his story and hapless children. Nobile and Farrell, Gebhard, Pomeroy, and others used the media to urge son, brother, uncle, father, aunt, and mother to rape and or sodomize their children in the comfort of their own homes. Many sexually aroused and frustrated readers would put down these magazines and feel naturally neuronally driven to sexually assault the young child asleep or hiding in the next room. In the evening, child incest victims often hide in closets, under beds, or on window ledges, hoping to escape the open, sensual style of their warm and affectionate family predators. December 1977, the same month and year that Penthouse promoted incest, the next magazine in the bookstore rack, Playboy, did the same. When in the special piece about three sisters seducing daddy, Playboy, however, had pushed incest since its first issues via Hefner's carefully selected cartoons. We must wonder how many children have endured the years of incest that Kinsey Hefner et al. Cult advocated. On the other hand, psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers, and others who created shape and accredited their profession as sex experts are also incest pushers. These self-accredited sex experts testified in all major obscenity, pornography, sodomy, and homosexuality cases, and even child custody cases that pornography and incest are harmless and can even be enriched for children. The sex experts, diseased view of children and sex has affected all our lives without exception. I need to make a little adjustment here to my microphone. Take the guard out of the way. It's bugging me, hitting my glasses. Children in Playboy. In 1989, as a principal investigator for the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention, DOJ and OJJDP, I completed a study, Images of Children, Crime and Violence in Playboy, Penthouse, and Hustler. For this study, our coders identify Playboy with 1,196 cartoons of children, most of them sexualized, and with 1,849 visuals of children under 18, also usually sexualized, by implication or association with the centerfold photo and other techniques, measuring the softest Playboy pornography for its toxic treatment of eros, implicates its followers as producing measurably stronger erotoxins. For example, in August 1975, Playboy ran a full-page, full-color pornographic advertisement for its harder erototoxic, as I call it, satellite publication, OUI. In this large photo, a teenager, Jane, lay naked on a bare mattress, handcuffed to the tarnished metal bed frame, wearing only sheer black stockings, which suggest her harlotry to blur adult sexuality with youth. The text traffics Jane directly into the brains, mirrored memories, and bodies of millions of Playboy consumers. How one family solved its discipline problem. This is Jane. When she is nice, she is very, very nice. But when she is naughty, she has to be punished. Lately, Jane has been very, very naughty. That is why, in the current issue of O Magazine, Jane is pictured in a variety of poses that restrict her movement. It's for her own good, and not, incidentally, your pleasure. And it's only an O. Elsewhere, Playboy used the ploy of disguising a foreign film to undermine its consumers' awareness of being brainwashed. In one clip, a father holds his young, retarded nymphet upside down, exposing her reproductive organs as he is about to rape her. Another Playboy film clip displays the back of a man's head as his tween daughter apparently presses Papa towards her crotch. Playboy, as highlights photographer David Hamilton's artsy simulated lesbian scenes between nude teenagers. In our DOJ study from December 1953 to December 1984, her coders identified 266 Playboy visuals of children systematically depicted in some degree of nudity, like Jane, the retarded nymphet, Hamilton's naked little girls, innocent nude teenager lovers, and so on. Of these, 129 visuals were in a home doorway yard, and another 66 in a bedroom hotel room. In the 1,849 Playboy child visuals that our coders identified, we found 688 other characters. Of these, almost 400 were incest visuals. 54.1% were sexually linked to a parent. 9.3% to an other relative. 8.6% to the older sibling, 4.9% to an unspecified relative, and 1.2% to the grandparent. Playboy photographer, as father knows best. In February 1979, Playboy ran a photo story, Father Knows Best, which reported the photographer, Ron Vogel, had been snapping pictures of his daughter ever since she was a baby. At 21, she's still his favorite model. Indeed, Vogel pimps his naked daughter directly into the neurochemistry of millions of Playboy using fathers. The article says in their nudist family, Lexi always competed with the naked models for her father's attention. Right. A multiple page spread of photos of Lexi show dad tying up his daughter in naught but leather strappings to leave her anatomically, graphically exposed. Pursuing Vogel's exploited daughter, Playboy's aroused dads are naively excited by an innate sense of fear and shame beyond their normal aroused state, while Playboy and Vogel share the images as though they are, oh, so casual and, well, asexual. But these pictures are embedded forever in viewers' brains, and some dads identifying with a handsome young photographer in several intimate photos with his daughter will decide they too can take naked photos of their daughters, perhaps to send some to Playboy. Few Playboy users suspect that they have been tricked and manipulated into viewing their own daughters and others as welcoming incestuous sexual targets, but many dads, thinking that it was their own idea, will act out on their daughters and never know why they had those overwhelming, frightening, devastating urges. They were conned by Playboy and Ron Vogel, some father. She digs forceful figures, so come on strong, Big Daddy. Playboy also published a series of sadistic child molestation photos by J. Frederick Smith. One naked girl, allegedly an adolescent, is eroticized and sadistically posed like Christ on the cross, but laid out horizontally. Playboy tells its consumers the hung-up miss will excuse abuse, albeit with clenched teeth. Adjacent to this, Playboy displays another of Smith's photographs. A sleeping girl, supposedly about 8 years old, lies naked with her hair and pigtails on full-color Disney character sheets as she holds a Raggedy Ann doll. Playboy's accompanying text is unashamed, as it obviously panders incestuous violent rape. Baby doll. It's easy to feel paternalistic toward a cuddly type above. Naturally, she digs forceful father figures. So come on strong, Big Daddy. November 1971. The Playboy Advisor column, formerly penned by James R. Peterson, is one of the magazine's regular features. Peterson, who lectures nationwide in colleges, was identified some years ago as the country's most popular sex education resource. Posing as a savvy sex advisor, Peterson wrote responses to letters allegedly from the juvenile and adult readers who sought advisors about wines, orgasms, sound systems, and so on. In the magazine's May 1987 issue, a clearly planted letter asked how to be safe for maids. In response, Peterson directs millions of American men to find virgins or very young lovers in order to cut down their chances of being exposed to the virus. Intermingled with such incest and child abuse sabotage, the monthly centerfolds include photographs of Playboy playmates throughout their childhoods. Typical captions of these child photos include, 8 weeks, my first centerfold, age 1, already playmate material, age 5, my first topless picture. Cartoons as propaganda. In 2006, California Health Department advertising campaign featured cartoon characters shaped like male genitalia. The campaign advocated STD testing for San Francisco's bisexual and homosexual men. A study of the casual effects of the ads found that in neighborhoods where the ads appeared on billboards and bus shelters, between 40 and 60% of the survey respondents who were aware of the risque ads said they had recently tested. Thus, the officials said the cartoons changed attitudes and conduct. So too, Playboy, Penthouse, and Hustler cartoons changed attitudes and conduct. Cartoons urging sex with children appeared in Playboy in a systematic manner from 1954 to 1984. In 1954, several cartoons had little boys seeking sex with adult women. One cartoon was drawn by Hefner. The cartoon depicts three boys closely examining semi-nude pictures of women on a burlesque theater display, while the fourth lad, looking fully satisfied, is watching a dog. One of the boys explains why Joey is not looking at the pictures of the naked women. Joey ain't in it. Interested. He's got a sister. In 1968, Playboy's straw man from The Wizard of Oz hints that he wants to have sex with flat-chested Dorothy. However, many consumers would think it was their own dirty minds that thought sex. When the straw man leered at the confused Dorothy and asked, "Would you like to know what I really want?" By 1978, the straw man cowardly lying, and the tin man gang raped Dorothy. Full assault and in full color in Playboy. Dorothy was sprawled out in the yellow brick road, complaining to the police officer who does nothing. Through her skirt is torn open, though her skirt is torn open, so we can see the exaggerated breasts drawn by one of Playboy's main child sex abuse artists, Michael Fulkers, a.k.a. Brian Davis. So no, it wasn't the consumer's pedophile minds, not yet. It was Playboy's closest pedophile seeding pedophile fantasies among their naive readers. Soon, though, millions of consumers would get the Dorothy rape and find it funny. Playboy used fairy tales and other forms of illusion and fantasy as a standard conditioning device to circumvent the consumer's suspicions that the magazine was grooming him to be a pedophile. But by 1971, incest appeared often in Playboy cartoons, and routine viewing would change these consumers. All of Playboy's child cartoons, 390, took place in a home doorway yard setting, and 47 included the child in a direct sexual encounter with a family member. On the graphic evidence, Hefner personally culled about 400 cartoons from roughly 200,000 submissions each year for 30 years, and from December 1953 to the 1990s, documented in my book, Soft Porn Plays Hardball. Thus, Hefner himself mindfully selected published the monthly child cartoons that included gang rapes of children, the sexual abuse of benevolent father figures. Despite our devastating child pornography research findings and our DOJ study, Playboy lied in response. If other magazines are publishing cartoons of gang rapes of children, fathers sexually abusing daughters, benevolent or father figures are raping or murdering young girls, Playboy never has, never will. Our readers know that, and lying with statistics is still lying. The distribution of the United States DOJ Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention execute executive summary, 24 page. Precis, with its graphic anthology of child pornography, examples in Playboy, Penthouse, and Hustler, troubled many of the magazine consumers who saw it. In February 1986, Playboy finally reprinted one of its letters to the editor, requesting Playboy's comments about the study. Playboy did not directly answer the letter, but excused it as a case of lumping Playboy together with other magazines. Find my pen, mark my spot, and take my break. Should have had my pen already. So, take a little break here and be back in a few minutes, everyone. So, about a 6-minute break here, I guess. Be right back, everyone.
Here's a song that they sang with the Statesman Quartet back in 1950, and it's still great. You do the Big Chief's part, and you do Jake's part, and I'll just sit over here and wish I was in the group, okay?
Up above my head, there's a music in the air. Up above my head, there's a music in the air. Up above my head, there's a music in the air. And I really do believe,
and I really do believe,
there's a heaven somewhere. World go round, that's the way to be happy, that much I found. Sing a song and be happy and free, so turn around, children, and follow me.
Well, I have a soul that's weary and worn, but I've heard the music since the day I was born. And I remember what the good Lord said. Now I hear his music and it's up above my head.
song and you'll be happy and free. So turn around, children, and follow me.
Well, I have a soul that's weary and worn, but I've heard the music since the day I was born. And I remember what the good Lord said. Now I hear his music and it's up above my head.
Okay, some uplifting music there to break the bad book reading. The terrible things that people do. But I was tapping my toes and singing along. I think Mom and Andy probably were too. Okay, 2 years later, Bert Joseph, the Playboy lawyer and former chairman of the Media Coalition, said that pornographic child pictures in Playboy are extremely rare and occurred mostly in older issues. He admitted that Playboy does run cartoons with children being sexually molested, but as Hustler's Larry Flint claimed about Chester the molester, these child pornographic jokes were just commentaries on society's defects. Yes, I've heard all of that, Jug. I had heard that. And a lot of kids went missing from them places near the penthouses. Lots of boys and girls went missing. Joseph also faulted from my OJJDB study, saying we overcounted incidents of child abuse cartoons in Playboy. For example, Joseph falsely claimed that we counted each panel of Playboy's Little Annie Fanny comic strip as a separate cartoon, thus inflating the numbers. However, having read my OJJDP report, Joseph knew that our research analyzed no comic strip characters. Playboy's Annie, however, was a pseudo-child raped by hundreds of bug-eyed males in each comic strip. Ho-ho, coincidentally, the year Joseph made this statement, Little Annie Fanny was removed from Playboy's magazine. Such a coincidence. Playboy cartoonists blame child victims. In his 2009 book, Empire of Illusion, Pulitzer Prize winner Chris Hedges notes the sexual sabotage of pornography. He says television's The Girls Next Door, which stars the octogenarian Hugh Hefner and girlfriend young enough to be his granddaughters, is spiced up with undertones of incest and pedophilia. Brainwashing viewers with incest and pedophilia has always been a Playboy subtext. When readers of the February 1971 Playboy turned the pages from the sexually aroused naked women. They came again with a black and white cartoon of a middle-class living room. There's Playboy's artist, Cole, drew an old man leeringly imagining his granddaughter naked, as his wife incidentally comments to a friend that the old fellows love his grandchild. That the old fellow loves his grandchild. Alongside incest, 72 Playboy cartoons had a child involved in prostitution, buying sex or barter, massage parlor activity, and dealing, that is, incest, for pay. Considering that cartoons are especially appealing to youngsters who stop to study and look at them, child sex cartoons are particularly insidious. Claiming to have selected all the Playboy cartoons until the 1990s, Hugh Hefner would have chosen this incest cartoon drawn by Folkers, a Playboy cartoonist who published at least 35 child abuse funnies. In this one, the girl is depicted as about 6 years old, with the naked exaggerated breasts that Playboy commonly drew on his child sex victims, to blur the child's age and confuse the aroused customers. This girl is voluntarily happy, prostituting herself to a male relative, dad, or uncle. Folkers and Hefner have the child archly say to the man, "But first of all, we have to ask Teddy's permission, and that costs $40. In May 1974, the Hefner-Folkers team again aroused, confused, and desensitized Playboy reader participants with their happy incest theme. In this scene, a naked little girl of roughly 8 years old is with an old man in his bed. Looking like Shirley Temple, the curly-top child with naked exaggerated breasts talks to Mom on the bedside telephone, grinning. She says, "Uncle William and I are playing a game of consequences." In another example of children as willing victims, Bill Lee depicts a 4-year-old tyke confounding her would-be molester. "No, thank you, nice man," she says. "I don't want to go for a ride in your car. Why don't we just go up to my place and ball?" Typical of Playboy's child entrapment theme, these cartoonists blame their victims and render the naive children unhurt by whatever transpires, as is always the case with little Annie Fanny. Often, such cartoons show a clever adult male who tricks a child into sex by saying it will cure her hiccups, fix her headache, or serve as her consequence for losing her game, and so on. Some argue that these cartoons are nonviolent, but it is ludicrous to excuse something as nonviolent when it instructs in trickery to violate a child or woman. All such images are violent and predatory by definition. Brooke Shields, Sugar and Spice, Child Pornography, published in Playboy Press. In 1983, the case of Shields versus Gross dealt with parents selling their children for sexual purposes. At age 18, the teenage actress, Brooke Shields, born 1965, sought to halt the distribution of naked photographs taken of her by Gary Gross when she was 10 years old. Shield's mother allowed her to be marketed as an oiled nude with coiffed hair and heavy adult makeup for pornographic use to Playboy Press. The lawsuit stated plaintiff had been a child model, and in 1975, when she was 10 years of age, a series of photographs to be financed by Playboy Press required plaintiff to pose nude in a bathtub used not only in Sugar and Spice, but also, to the knowledge of plaintiff and her mother, in other publications and in a display of larger-than-life photo enlargements in the windows of a store on Fifth Avenue in New York City. Today, we recognize these oiled and naked images as child pornography, and therefore as illegal. But for his own private reasons, the New York judge ruled against the rights of Brooke Shields to retrieve her naked photos. The New York Court of Appeals, soon to be Chief Judge Saul Wachtler, occurred in the 1983 decision. Less than 10 years later, Wachtler was arrested and convicted of sexual crimes involving an underage child. Imagine that. Apparently, his earlier judicial decisions are not being revisited based on his inherent conflict of interest. Imagine that. The court allowed Gross to distribute and sell his photos of the naked Brooke Shields whenever he wished. Like most children controlled by errant parents, Shields had, however, had nowhere to hide. Charles Jordan's Fifth Avenue shoe salon displayed photos of the 10-year-old Brooke, promising even greater reaction. Says the well-satisfied Playboy Press, Penthouse, and similar outlets reproduced these photos and sold them to consumers. And then, in its introduction to the series of naked images of the young Shields, Playboy Press stated, "We knew we were onto something altogether different when we saw these photos by Gary Gross." Playboy Press says these are photos of a little girl who projects an indefinable sensuality. Inside that little girl, there's a sexual woman hiding. Hiding? ? As often as possible, in 1978, Playboy exploited the 12-year-old in the film Pretty Baby, which was set in 1917. In March, Playboy appointed its outcut showing Shields in bed with her naked mom, played by liberal Susan Sarandon. As a potential customer looks on, the idea here is that the mother-daughter sex act, common to prostituted women and children at the time. Playboy, erotoxins, belittle incest trauma. Kinsey's efforts to downplay the medical and emotional consequences of incestuous abuse showed up in psychiatrist Judith Herman, M.D.'s Father-Daughter Incest. Kinsey himself, though he never denied the reality of child sexual abuse, did as much as he could to minimize its importance. Some 80% of the women who had experienced a childhood sexual approach by an adult reported to Kinsey's investigative team that they had been frightened and upset by the incident. Kinsey cavalierly belittled these reports. He hastened to assume the public that children should not be upset by these experiences. If they were, this was the fault not of the sexual aggressor, but of prudish parents and teachers who caught the child, who caused the child to become hysterical. Imagine that. Being traumatized by rape as hysterical. It is amazing that the feminist scholar like Herman missed Kinsey's brazen data that proved he was at best an economic pimp and procurer of mass child rape. If not a child rapist himself, Herman also missed Kinsey's claim that 4,441 women he interviewed, none were ever harmed by a sexual encounter. Really. Historically, it is difficult that one scholar to be a pathologist, to be the pathology of another. Belittlement of incest trauma dominated Kinsey's studies and those of his collaborators, creating the field of human sexuality and mass sex education. Prevalent in Playboy and other pornographic publications, such belittlement then wormed its way into mass media and then the modern American culture, especially law and sex school education. For example, the incest citation of the free encyclopedia Wikipedia, founded by Jimmy Wales, cited as a pioneering pornographer. Quotes Kinsey's zealot and pedophile advocate Floyd Martinson, who parroted Kinsey's incest frauds. Incest is also an important part of sexual exploration by children, especially in families where children of the same age. A study by Floyd Martinson found that 10 to 15% of college students had a childhood sexual experience with a brother or sister. The academic pedophile lobby. Floyd Martinson, PhD, edited Children and Sex in 1981 with another pedophile advocate, Larry Constantine, PhD. Both men are celebrated for their claims that on infant and child sexuality, capacity, and experience. In his presentation in Wales at the British Psychological Association Conference, Martinson encouraged infant and child sexuality activity. Not surprisingly, Martinson is cited favorably in Pedica, the Journal of Pedophilia, a child molester magazine designed to promote the acceptance of pedophilia and pornography. Pedica said pedophilia has been and remains a legitimate and productive part of the totality of human experience. Yeah, you're talking about Brooke Shields, Annie? Yeah, she was exploited. That's for sure. That movie, Blue Lagoon, I don't know, she was like 13 or 14 or whatever the case was, and that was very, very explicit. She still talks about that today. I've seen magazines and stuff about that. She's still not happy about it. This advocacy would cause many, perhaps most people, to conclude that Martinson is a closet pedophile or pederast. He was also a child sexuality expert for Playboy. To sway hesitant parents and arouse Playboy readers, Martinson reiterated Kinsey's claims of infant sexuality. The Playboy editors say, considered your wasted and youth when you know the erotic excitement starts in the womb. And that little boys can have orgasms by their first birthday. Martinson's assertion was gaining currency within the sex establishment that very young children should be allowed and perhaps encouraged to conduct in full sex, a full sex life without interference from parents and the law, says sports and sexuality expert psychiatrist Lene Smith, MD. While society is looking at ways to draw the line and say clearly that adolescent girls are not fair game, we see on Playboy's March 1996 cover a knock-kneed adolescent in a parochial school uniform depicted as a stripper next door, ever ready to symbolically sexually service all male viewers. Playboy continues its practice of sexualizing extreme youth, innocence, vulnerability, and submission. Playboy is flagrantly glamorizing the adolescent student as a sexual target and perpetrating the propaganda of pedophiles that children solicit sex from adults. Catholic schoolgirls as a genre of criminal child pornography and pseudo-child adult bookstore porn is standard fare. Recycling these images is a more legitimized commercial sex format only multiplies the harm. A New York judge commented that a society that loses its sense of outrage is doomed to extinction. Where is the outrage of child advocates, parents, all citizens? A society cannot continue to abandon its responsibility to its children for humanitarian reasons as well as its own future. But Floyd Martinson claimed people foolishly feared incest. Though he did not admit to personal experience, Martinson wrote of father's drunken condition and daughter's delight in the sensual experience. Father, he says, didn't know what he was doing. Daughter, says, did. Father, make love to the child? Martinson assured us the child liked the sensation, so she let it continue for a while. The sexpert's old pedophile tale hasn't a shred of credence. Still, did any sexpert researchers follow the so-called delighted daughter for the next few decades to see what long-term consequences resulted from the sexual experience of being raped by a drunken father? I'm kind of waiting for Biden's daughter, that entire fiasco, to come out. That'll be really fun. That's not a memoir. What's that called? Girls write their, her diary. I'm kind of waiting on that to come out. Really, really want to see how that plays out. Yes, diary mom. Beyond gagging and choking, real incest symptoms include bulimia, to shrink from sight, obesity, wearing baggy clothes or many layers of clothing in an effort to cover up from peering eyes and to provide protection by appearing larger, eating disorders, substance abuse, perfectionism, an attempt to overcompensate for feelings of worthlessness, depression, suicidal ideation, promiscuity, prostitution, self-harm, phobias, homosexuality, and more. Martinson ignores and hides the common results of incest. think I'll take the break right here. Need a bathroom break. So let me see. I guess about 5.5 minutes. I'll be right back, everyone. All right. Thanks, everybody, for staying here. The second hour of my live show. I forgot to mention, Andy's going to play an old show from about 9 years ago. I think it was April 2014. I didn't get the date. Maybe Annie can tell you what that is. She downloaded the show. A journalist named Stephen Lindemann came on the show and talked about the Ukrainian crisis way back then. I haven't heard it in, well, I don't normally re-listen to old shows, but this one is kind of, I guess, kind of important 9 years later. See what he has to say about it. I listened to the first 10 minutes of it, and I had forgotten all about it until today. Actually, a couple of weeks ago, I remembered it, but mentioned it to Annie today. Child pornographic sabotage, feeding pedophiles. Across the nation, educated and economically secure friends, neighbors, educators, judges, teachers, lawyers, doctors, college presidents, and even Nobel Prize winner, and even a Nobel Prize winner, have been arrested for possession of child pornography, as well as for child sexual abuse. We've had safe public libraries for over 100 years. One night, say we have turned a corner in society. What is on the other side? ? According to PedoWatch, a pedophile monitoring group, online pedophiles are telling each other to use public libraries to download child pornography. But PedoWatch is working with law enforcement worldwide to remove child pornography and child lurking activity, and currently works with law enforcement to monitor the activities of online pedophiles. According to Donna Rice Hughes in her March 2000 Senate hearing testimony, public libraries are a breeding ground for sexual attacks on children. Consider the following data excerpted from Enough is Enough Safety 101. And now that's kind of weird, because I thought libraries had, I don't know, I thought they didn't have any, I thought they had stipulations against pornography. You couldn't access it on their computers or anything, and they certainly didn't have a lot to do with books or anything like that, but I don't know. I've been on public libraries, computers, two or three times, and they have filters. So that's kind of weird. I don't know. 40% of arrested child pornography possessors were dual offenders, who both sexually victimized children and possessed child pornography. 83% had images involving children between ages 6 and 12. 39% were children ages 3 to 5. 19% had images of infants and toddlers under age 3. Internet child pornography images increased 1,500% since 1997. Approximately 20% of all internet pornography involves children. Wow. Child pornography was a $3 billion annually industry in 2005. It has grown since. Yeah, I know. I know, Andy. Internet child pornography images increased 1,500% since 1997. Approximately 20% of all internet pornography involves children. Child pornography was a $3 billion Child pornography reports increased 39% in 2004. Over 20,000 children are sexualized on the internet weekly. More babies and toddlers are appearing in abuse in more torturous and sadistic. Children are between 6 and 12 are getting younger. Most illegal sites are hosted in the United States. The U.S. Customs Service notes over 100,000 websites with child pornography. Wow. Amazon.com subscribers use credit cards for a monthly fee of between $30 and $50 to download photos and videos, or a one-time fee of a few dollars for single images. Child sexual abuse is obvious, but here are studies. A New Zealand internal affairs study connected viewing child pornography with committing child abuse, child sexual abuse. New Zealand's Department of Internal Affairs, 2006. The American Journal of Preventive Medicine reports 1 in 6 men as sexual abuse child victims. Almost 40% of perpetrators were female. American Journal of Preventive Medicine, June 2005. 1 in 4 women reported childhood sex abuse, largely by males. 19 billion is generated annually on the street for human trafficking. Christine Dolan, the Global Coalition to End Human Trafficking Now. I think I have Christine Dolan as a Facebook friend. I'm not sure. The Global Coalition to End Human Trafficking Now cites 10 million children prostituted worldwide. Online sexual predators. 40% charged with child pornography admit to sexually abusing children. Reuters, 2003. The Butler study found 85% of offenders for child pornography also molested children. 1 in 5 children who use computer chat rooms has been approached over the internet by pedophiles. Detective Chief Super Keith Ackerman, Telegraph.co.uk, January 2002. 1 in 33 receive aggressive sexual solicitation, asked to meet, called them via phone, sent mail, money, or gifts, online victimization, June 2002. 25% told a parent, online victimization. 25% told a parent, June 2002. Children go missing at 750,000 per year, 62,500 per month, 14,423 per week, 2,054 per day, 85 per hour, 3 children every 2 minutes. NCMEC Online Victimization, a report on the nation's youth, April 3, 2000. 90% of teens go online, 74% at home, 31% from their bedroom. The Kaiser Family Foundation in consolidation with International Communications Research, 2001. Of children polled visited sexual sites. 43% say they have no internet use rules in their homes. Time CNN poll, 2000. 75% of parents say they know where children spend time online. But, but there's always a but. Yeah, that but when my stepdaughter, my stepniece, my stepsister's daughter was 13. She put him, her mother put her on the pill, and everybody questioned her why. And she said, "Well, she's gonna have sex anyways, so I'll just protect her." No, she's gonna have sex because you let her have sex. Just plain and simple. 58% of teens say they accessed objectionable websites. 39% offensive music. 25% sexual content. 20% violence. Source WebSense, USA Today, October 10 through the 12th, 1999. Pornographers disguise their sites, i.e. stealth sites, including Disney, Barbie, ESPN, etc., to entrap children. Conveyance Center, March 1999. 62% of parents of teenagers are unaware that their children have accessed objectionable websites. Yankelevich Partners Study, September 1999. 95% of all 15 to 17-year-olds go online, with 70% accidentally seeing pornography. Yeah, accidentally. 23% very or somewhat often. 55% of those exposed say they were not or not at all upset. 45% were very or somewhat upset. 26 popular child characters like My Little Pony, Action Man, linked to porn sites. 30% hardcore. Invisional 2000. Pornography and the Law. In 1967, the Colorado Law Review published the legal enforcement of morality that relies on Kinsey's data. To sabotage the American common law standards of virtue, honor, and chastity. Kinsey reports that in some groups among lower social levels, the article explained to its audience of lawyers, it is virtually impossible to find a single male who has not had sexual intercourse by the time he reaches his mid-teens. The author of that article was none other than Playboy magazine publisher Hugh Hefner, Kinsey's pamphleteer. Since Kinsey claimed to interview 1,400 sex offenders, any real scientist would report on what percentage of the sex offenders had sex by his mid-teens, not the Kinsey team. The Kinsey Institute and Hefner were all on a roll. Sexual purity, chastity, and modesty, the ideal culture, were being ripped away. Mass media penetrated almost all American homes, delivering a steady diet of sex as, at best, a predatory perversion at worst. Discussions about sexuality were becoming to spill from research circles and academia, to higher education and eventually sex education, infiltrated nearly every school in the country. Sex-related disorders would soon exact a painful cost, individually and collectively. Nationwide, states were mugging our common law base of history and Bible for scientific laws, based on Kinsey. They were liberalizing their sex laws, usually for the first time since statehood. The legalization of seduction, breach of promise, fornication, adultery, and pornography jump-started our national sexual dysfunction epidemic. Before Kinsey, exhibitionism, voyeurism, and pornography were illegal. Now, for the most part, they are legal. Obscenity, however, was illegal and still is. The issue today is how we define obscene. Again, the turning point of our history was 1955 with the ALI-MPC. Obscenity pre-Kinsey, illegal. Post-Kinsey, legal. Now, wait a minute. Obscenity pre-Kinsey, illegal. Post-Kinsey, still illegal. The slippage is so dramatic that, although obscenity is still illegal, most sexual materials mass distributed now would have been defined as illegal. Obscenity pre-Kinsey. Exhibitionism and voyeurism. Pre-Kinsey illegal, post-Kinsey largely legal. Exhibitionism is legal in the media and tolerated everywhere. We see prostitution, slipping, pseudo-child pornography, sadomasochism and bestiality in entertainment and in school, sex education, bookstores, and libraries. This creates voyeurs of all onlookers, hence de facto legalization of voyeurism. And pornography, erotoxins, pre-Kinsey illegal, post-Kinsey legal. Pornography is more profitable than legitimate film, and increasingly part of the legitimate films, play, and even dance. Kinsey, a pornography masturbatory addict and masochistic orchidist sufferer, claimed pornography was neither addictive nor harmful. And of course, more intelligent men use it. In 1953, Kinsey's pamphleteer, Hugh Hefner, launched Playboy. After 1957, pornography spread in the U.S. Supreme Court used the Kinseyan ALI-MPC definition of obscenity to legalize soft pornography. This triggered mass production of deviant pornography and eventually sadistic adult and child pornography, prostitution, child sexual abuse, rape, and general social disorder. Recently, liberal radio host Michael Goldfarb, what a name, Goldfarb, professed puzzlement about the motion picture production code of 1930, the Hays Code, which had prevented the filming of immoral words, plots, and scenes. Even today's system permits almost anything to be filmed and then rates the results, Goldfarb mused. The irony is that the arrival of censorship initiated Hollywood's golden age. Actually, that this really is not ironic. We are most creative when forced to think and to limit what we do. Else the bad always drives out the good. So thanks to the pro-morality Hays Code, which was based on the religious public agreed to view, my friends and I grew up watching great classic films, serious films that were complex and grimly realistic, and entertaining comics, musicals, and dramas with clean humor. There was seldom anything inching toward sexual exploitation, and the cinematic words didn't need ellipses. We spent our Saturday afternoons from commonly witty fictional heroines and independent-minded heroes who were strong, clever, and yes, moral. In these productions, the characters overcame obstacles, fell in love, and married forever. None of these films were erotic or pornographic, excluding fallen angels like Mae West and Jean Harlow. Almost all of the sensual films, heroines, and heroes of the 1940s were played by honorable virgins, adults who postponed sex until marriage. Why didn't the public mock such performances? Because these chaste portrayals were close enough to the audience's reality. The entertainment was believable because art imitated life. Remember, Kinsey himself claimed he was a virgin before marriage. Clara was certainly a virgin before marriage. Clyde Martin was a virgin before Kinsey seduced him. Vincent Knowles and his wife were virgins before marriage. Even Playboy's Hugh Hefner is on record of having been a heterosexual virgin until reading Kinsey's claims about everyone else's libidinous lives. Oh, Hugh Hefner is on record of being a heterosexual virgin. So that means he probably had homosexual sex with somebody before reading Kinsey's book. Huh. Or talking to Kinsey, being his, they were confidants or whatever. Socialites. Huh. Kind of makes you think. Today, people generally believe that we have no laws against obscenity. This is not so. Even the Federal Communications Commission declares on its website, 2010, it's against the law. Obscene material is not protected by the First Amendment to the Constitution and cannot be broadcast at any time. Most professionally made sex materials today are, however, legally obscene in that Supreme Court has established that to be obscene, material must meet a three-pronged test. Number one, an average person applying contemporary community standards must find that the material as a whole appeals to the prudent, to the purient interest. The material must depict or describe in a potentially offensive way sexual conduct specifically defined by applicable law. And number three, the material taken as a whole must lack serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. I think I'll take a break here. Get something to drink. Let's see. I guess a couple short songs. About 6 minutes. Be right back, everyone.
Move that created or galaxies flung into space. There was God. He was singing a song. The music was so beautiful that it had to be heard. So God created. And down through the ages, he's always had his singers who picked up fragments of the melody, hummed bits of harmony, or danced short movements. But no one has ever heard the whole song since God sang it alone. One of these days, he'll gather all his children home, and one by one, the singers of all the ages will lift their voices and fill in the parts life taught to them. At last, we'll hear love's sweetest songs that was first conceived in the heart of the great songwriter himself, and it will be perfect. What music there will be when the song of all the ages is sung around the Father's throne, when all God's singers get home.
As we sing here on earth, songs of sadness and mirth, 'tis a foretaste of rapture to come.
What a song can compare with the glory we share with all of God's speakers get
Okay, welcome back for the final segment of the show, everyone. And again, please help out the networks by donating if you're able to. I can't remember all the spiel that Roger goes into, but what he says every Wednesday. I know Andy deeply appreciates it. Since all public sex acts are still illegal, so prudent and absent, literary, artistic, political, or scientific value, or pornography seen in public is actually illegal. One cannot walk naked in public, copulate, or commit sodomy or sexual torture in a public square. Even in the midst of political, artistic, or scientific discourse, so doing so is in public films, stage, or magazines is definitely scientifically obscene. Obscene material is still obscene and illegal. Even if our government elites do not prosecute naked public sex acts in the media as criminal, the decadence, disease, and despoiling of the 1860 New York City has returned with a vengeance. With the end of World War II and the Kinsey's onslaught, books and movies too soon included vulgar swear words, violence, and graphic sex scenes. Content that was virtually pornographic was everywhere. U.S. Supreme Court Justice Anton Scalia, in a dissent on an obscenity ruling, said, "The First Amendment explicitly protects the freedom of speech and of the press. Oral and written speech, not expressive conduct. Virtually every law restricts conduct. The purpose of the Indiana's nudity law would be violated, I think, if 60,000 fully consenting adults crowded into the Hoosier Dome to display their genitals to one another, even if they were not offended. Innocent in the crowd. They sabotaged the porn generation. Post-Kinsey thanks to the ALI MPC and Hugh Hefner and his ilk. Pornography has become a part of the American landscape. The billion-dollar big pornography enterprise has merged with most major media outlets from Time Warner to Fox. Disney, hotel chains from Marriott to Sheraton, although Omni deliberately divested from in-room pornography. The other media and other media control agents. So it was not surprising that in 1981, New York versus Ferber decision to legalize pornographic child sexual abuse was completely censored by the National Free Press media. Though one New York Times item briefly appeared, an editorial supporting the 5-judge decision to legalize child pornography as freedom of speech. Similarly, the controlled media ignores pornography, which is commonly explicit in rapes and sex murders. According to Family Safe Media, the pornography industry generated $12 billion in annual revenue, which is more money than every NBA, NFL, and MLB team combined. And more money than ABC, NBC, and CBS combined. That money is power, buying votes, grants, and appointments in political, social, and academic systems. Internet pornography. The following data are excerpted from the Enough is Enough Safety 101. In 2006, 87% of university students polled they have virtual sex largely via internet messenger, webcam, and telephone. In 2004, there were 420 million pages of pornography, the majority apparently owned by less than 50 companies. The largest groups of viewers of internet porn are children between ages 12 and 17. Sex is the number one searched for topic on the internet. 58% of the public surveyed wanted government restrictions of internet pornography, even if the materials were legal in books and magazines. Commercial pornography sites, 74% displayed free teaser porn images on the homepage and porn banner ads. 66% did not warn of adult content. 11% warned but did not say sexually explicit content on the homepage. 25% prevented users from exiting the site, mousetrapping. Only 3% even required adult verification. 32 million women visited at least one pornographic website in 1 month in 2004. 41% of women said they viewed or downloaded pornographic pictures and movies. 25 million Americans allegedly visit cybersex sites between 1 and 10 hours per week. 4.7 million over 11 hours per week. At least 200,000 internet users are hooked on porn sites, X-rated chat rooms, or other sexual materials online. Pornography breeds its own sabotaged employees of the industry. The pornographic industry lures a damaged population as its employees. 90% are child sex abuse survivors. Degrading, dehumanizing acts as they are required of employees exacerbate disorders. USA and UK welfare police agencies must offer mandate counseling for staff who view objectionable material based on resulting trauma. Secondary negative effects of pornographic workplace on performers. Sexually transmitted diseases. 66-99% of pornography performers admit to herpes, a non-curable disease. Chlamydia gonorrhea is 12 times greater than the rate among LA County 20 to 24 year olds. 25 HIV cases were reported by adult industry medical health care since 2004. 70% of STDs in the porn industry occur in females. Mental health disabilities of pornographic workplace employees. Suicide and suicidal ideation. Post-traumatic stress disorder. Sexual trauma. Prostitution activities. Sexual addiction. Substance abuse. Public costs. Sex performers traumatized by a brutal workplace typically last 3 months to 3 years, putting most on the dole. Mental health, drug, alcohol, abortion, abuse require rehabilitation, hospitalization, drug overdoses, suicides, auto accidents, etc. need medical aid. Governmental services, pregnancies, abortions, PTSD require social services. Child protection services, child abuse, neglect, battery, foster care, etc. Women, infant children, WIC, penury, food, nutrition, for women and children. Unemployable, job gap. Common lack of high school diploma and dysfunctions. Law enforcement. Prostitution, domestic violence require police judicial time. Jails and prisons. Drugs, prostitution, DUI, domestic violence, parole, and jail. Pornographers dodge taxes. Federal and state workplace safety laws. In Robert Dupree's petitioner versus workers' compensation appeals board, etc., March 2, 2009, a pornographic performer contracted HIV, allegedly due to employer violation of standard workplace safety practices. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled the plaintiff, who, like most pornographic performers, suffers from multiple pre-existing pathologies, was an employee thus entitled to workplace safety. The blood-borne pathogens standard for employee protection is violated by most pornographers, who commonly demand release of semen, fecal matter, blood, and or potentially infectious material, opium. I don't know what that is. Mrs. Shelley Lubin, former porn star, concludes the majority of pornographic films currently produced involve direct contact between skin or mucous membranes and blood, semen, vaginal fluid, saliva, and other opium. Since these exchanges of potentially hazardous fluids clearly violate even minimal health safety measures, the majority of pornographic films being produced would be in violation of extant safety laws. In addition, recognizing pornographic performers as employees, directed and controlled by the employer, will finally provide these commonly already disabled pornographic employees with the health insurance, tax supports, and disability benefits commonly provided by employers to other workers in the United States of America. The character of the progeny of the greatest generation is being sabotaged, degraded by the anti-Judeo-Christian mass sexual abuse industry. Naturally, regular users of pornography are more likely to have sexually callous attitudes and accept the rape myth that when a woman says no, she means yes. The internet has changed how Americans send and receive mail, how they work and socialize, and also how with whom they view and make pornography. The most stunning shift in our vision of ourselves appears to be the fact that children are now challenging the big porn mandarins by making and distributing pornographic videos and images for themselves for free on the internet. The impact of pornography upon incest and family safety, solvency is and will be staggering. With the arrivals of internet pornography, the newspapers daily report arrests of predators and recovery of victims of abduction, rape, and murder. A civil war is being waged, sabotaging the most vulnerable Americans at home, at work, on our streets, in our libraries, on our campuses, everywhere. Okay, we're into chapter 9. Sex educators as sexual saboteurs. Hands down, if you pardon the expression, the real big daddy of pedophilia cheek could only be Alfred Kinsey. Could only be the long dead Alfred Kinsey. How did Kinsey and his team get away with it? As we can see now, wrote Tom Bethel in his excellent review of the Kinsey facts in the May 1996 American Spectator. Science had a vast prestige. Science had vast prestige at the time, and Kinsey exploited it. Any perversion could be concealed beneath the scientist's mock and the posture of detached observation. Mary Eberstadt, The Weekly Standard, June 17, 1996. Any sort of sexual education that anybody has had in the past 50 years came right from the Kinsey Institute. So his impact is enormous, and in ways it's probably impossible for us to completely grasp. When Kinsey published his information, he changed our culture completely. Laura Linney, who starred as Mrs. Kinsey in the 2004 film Kinsey. In 1948, I was blissfully unaware that Kinsey published his much ballyhooed male report. But that's a snob word, Mark. I can tell. Ballyhooed. That's a Bobby Kennedy word. Snob word. But it did not take long for me to feel its direct effects. A scant 2 years later, my co-ed junior year high school health class watched a highly inappropriate animated cartoon of animals mating. While the boys leered and hooted, the girls giggled and blushed. Our avant-garde health teacher appeared oblivious to the student discomfort. I am reminded now of the photo of Kinsey and company gleefully screening a porcupine mating film in a group of clearly traumatized children. I, for one, stalked out of my sex ed class, sensing that something mean-spirited and ugly was being forced upon us. At the time, I did not know what it was. I was unaware of a phony health connection to that today dominates the Western world's increasingly malevolent forms of sex education. Kinsey's pioneered research was not the first. Publicity campaigns designed to sustain Kinsey's false findings have told Americans for decades that Kinsey was the first to investigate sex and call for sexual toleration. That was untrue. European sex science radicals preceded Kinsey. For example, in 1895, the German homosexual movement had grown so rapidly that they were a major power lobby. In 1897, Magnus Hirschfeld, M.D., founder of the Institute for Sexual Sciences, and a bizarre bisexual, had already launched international conferences on sex science and homosexual rights. In his book, The Sexual Modernist, University of California at San Diego sociologist Jack Douglas described the European sexuality movement at the turn of the 20th century. The standard picture presented by sexual modernists today depicts a few lonely culture heroes, especially Havelock Ellis and Sigmund Freud, suddenly launching a revolution against massive Victorian sexual repression. This picture is completely false. Havelock Ellis' work was built on a mass of earlier scholarly and scientific work, all carefully footnoted, and Freud drew almost all of his major ideas from Ellis and other sex researchers, and from literature and philosophy. Douglas described sex research journals that included extensive case studies of all forms of sexual activity, but the dialogue of vigorous scholars energetically challenged both repression and licentiousness. Douglas wrote, "What is striking, by contrast with our own day, in which there is a reigning dogmatism of sexual modernism, is how lively and undogmatic the massive controversies over sexuality were." In 1948, learning of Sigmund Freud's penis envy theory, that girls in vain the male sex organ, I recall thinking that whoever believed that was an idiot, since millions of teenage girls like me had never even seen the organ in question, much less envied it. In 1948, we might envy a pretty sweater, driving a convertible, or travel to Paris, but not a penis, or the power for which it supposedly stood. I concluded that penis envy was Freud's problem. Turns out Freud's other problem was covering up crimes of several of his aristocratic, free-spirited colleagues who were sexually abusing their daughters. Thanks to a daring expose of Freudian psychiatrist Jeffrey Mason, PhD, we know that having been condemned by his medical colleagues for exposing the trauma of incest, Freud invented a literary scientific theory to ingratiate himself back into medical society. Should patients complain of incest, Freud said they lied to cover up their own erotic desires. Freud gave his rejection of incest classical Greek archetypes. Oedipus and Electra. And abracadabra, a Greek theory, was born. Freud contended that boys lust for mom and girls lust for dad. His medical colleagues, especially the guilty offenders, liked that idea and welcomed Freud back into his place on the medical pantheon. I think I'm going to end right here for the day. Back's getting a little sore. And I need something to drink. So, Annie, get a song ready here. I'm just going to drop the radio stream. And let you pick it up to run the a song or two. And then the extra, I think it's 47 minutes of that interview with Stephen Lindemann. So see everyone tomorrow with me and Roger.